Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
And you can be in no doubt, having heard that Europe is ever changing. It's a different place now than it was 2 years ago, a different place again than it was 2 years before that. We've war in the East, the climate crisis, immigration, as we've just been hearing, Brexit and the EU. Well, the geopolitics, the people, even the idea of Europe varies, and that's the subject of a new book by journalist Ben Judah. This is Europe, How We Live Now, and Ben joins us. Good morning, Ben.
Thank you so much for having me on.
It's extraordinary, isn't it, that we're talking to you on the morning that we're hearing about that tragedy in Greece, because it's not unrelated to some of the stories that you tell in this book.
Well, I think that this tragedy is part of the way we live now, and 20th century Europe was defined by a wall that went down the middle of it, separating the democratic part of the continent from the totalitarian part of the continent. And now in 21st century Europe, our politics is being defined by the walls going up around it. And those are, as this tragedy illustrates, walls of tragedy.
Mm-hmm. This book, it's fascinating how you've written it, and as a result it flies along. You use personal stories to tell the social and political story of Europe. Just explain to our listeners how you put it together.
I felt that the traditional form of travel writing, a sort of great white British male wandering around Europe telling you what to think, was totally defunct, and I didn't want to write a book like that. So I wrote the book in the form of 23 portraits where you really get the impression that you're talking to the person, that you're listening to the people that I meet on this journey. And they're all on different moments of the arc of life, from childhood all the way to facing death, from all the corners of Europe, from County Cork to Istanbul, from Russia to Lisbon. And all of the people in the book believe that something about their story captures the way we live now and how that's being transformed by migration, war, technology, and climate change.
We might talk about some of those individual stories, and we'll start in Belarus, focus, of course, on Belarus since the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Tell us how you got an insight into what's happening there.
I think that right now in Europe, our continent's being reshaped by two great quests for freedom. There's a quest for freedom coming from the south, and those are the people seeking freedom that, you know, a few of them died tragically today in the Mediterranean. And then there are these wars and failed revolutions for freedom that are taking place in Ukraine and in Belarus, where it's being forgotten, but there was a failed revolution there against the sort of Russian-backed dictator. And I wanted to capture that side of Europe in the book. So I got to know the Snezhkov family, and there really could have been anybody in Europe, a sort of normal family, parents and kids that got involved in the protests against the regime and then were chased out of the country in harrowing circumstances by the local security services, which are still called the KGB. And I got to know them as refugees over the border in the Baltic states. And they'd had to flee through, one of them had to flee through the forests after he'd been imprisoned. The other ones had to flee by flee illegally just over the border by car before the police and the tax system caught up with them. And that's the other side of the great migration that's coming into Europe. Over 4 million people entered the EU, Switzerland and Norway last year fleeing Ukraine, and that's alongside 1 million people that came claiming asylum from the south and from the Middle East.
I found the pictures that accompanied the story about the Italian mountain rescuer absolutely haunting. Will you tell people his story if you can, Ben?
Well, I think we live in a particular moment where not only is technology pushing us away from each other, but we're living in a moment where a lot of terrible things are happening. It's very easy to abstract them, to talk about the migrant crisis or the war in Ukraine, and to forget the humanity behind it. And I really think the job of writers and journalists is to help people to see and to help people to feel. And I felt in order to even be able to write about people, escaping Africa and Eastern Europe, trying to enter Western European countries, I have to take part of the migrant journey myself. So I went to Italy, where there were migrants from Africa that were trying to make it to France. And you can't just cross into France if you've claimed asylum in Italy under EU regulations. You've got to stay there until you've been processed. But they didn't want to. For them, France was the promised land because they spoke French and because they knew it was a country that was more welcoming for migrants and refugees. So they were crossing the passes of the Alps, the passes of Napoleon and Hannibal. And I joined them on one night, and I crossed over the passes with them myself. And at one particular moment, I found myself, in single file going through the sort of deep snow, and a man from Africa tapped me on the back and went to me, "Brother, will you carry my daughter? I can't carry her. I'm too tired. I'm too exhausted. I've done this huge journey coming all the way across the Sahara." So I kind of found myself carrying this little girl over the over the mountains until I was unable to continue, and some migrants had to help pull me up onto the road, where finally the smugglers' cars were waiting. So one of the things I did is, I think it's really important in a kind of visual world where we kind of live through Instagram and through images, that the book's illustrated. So I took half the pictures myself, and then half the pictures I asked the people in the book to contribute them themselves. So the pictures that I took of crossing that path were the ones that I took myself, but then lots and lots and lots of different people in the book, they're their own pictures, such as the chapter on the family from Belarus that flees. Those are pictures that they took themselves of their lives and their journey. And I think it creates a real kind of intimacy. I think it really helps you kind of click and understand that these are real lives, taking that into that antidote against abstraction.
Mm. And what you're left with after that story about the pass between Italy and France is that so many people don't make it. The people who try to make it are dressed so inappropriately, they've got jeans and trainers. They don't realise what they're doing, what they're letting themselves in for. But such is the desperation to get to France that they're willing to take that risk. And then that really poignant moment where, the tragedy won't be revealed until the winter has passed and the thaw comes in the spring. And then you'll start to see just how many people perished trying to make that journey.
And that's the Europe we live in now. That's the way we live now, where mountain rescuers are going up into the Alps, and people are too frightened to be rescued by them because they're frightened of being turned over to the police and being put into a whole deportation system that could send them all the way back to where they began in Africa or in the Middle East or further away. And these mountain rescuers are, their stomachs are turning as they realise that only when the spring comes, will they be able to count the to find the bodies, lost under the snow?
I want to turn to the story, which is set here in Ireland, in Cork. It's a very different story, isn't it? About a woman and her cancer diagnosis, and what drives her to carry on.
Well, that's, really, I think, one of the most important stories in the book, and one that I'm really kind of honoured that she let me tell her story. And the concept of the book is, I wanted to have people on every single part of the arc of life, from teenagehood to facing death. And as I came to the end of the book, I was sort of looking for that chapter, and I was thinking, how do I capture how we live now? And I managed to connect with a woman in County Cork who was living in who was in palliative care from cancer, and she kind of invited me to tell her story about her life, what the diagnosis was, how she'd carried on. And really, for me, it was one of the most kind of moving moments of writing the book, because she told me, "I don't think I'll be around when the book comes out." And I didn't really believe it when she told me that, because cancer is a very deceptive illness. You can't quite tell what's happening just by looking at somebody, but very sadly, she passed away.
In February of this year gone, wasn't it?
That's right. Her name's kind of Sheila O'Keefe, and she told me her whole story and her whole life. And I think that's, I'm really very, very honoured to have told her story, because I think that her story is also the story of millions of us. And it's the kind of story that I never really heard before in a book or read in a book, and you can't find it on search engines or on the newspaper. But it was really a very important story I think people need to listen to about how we live now.
Yeah, I would say that about all of the stories in this book. It's so unusually and well told. And Ben, thank you for joining us on the programme today. Ben Judah, the author of This Is Europe, How We Live Now, which is published by Picador. And at the Kilkenny Arts Festival this August, Ben will be delivering this year's Hubert Butler Lecture. That's on the 20th of August. Tickets will be available from the 21st of June, which is coming up very soon, on kilkennyarts.ie. Now, an update on what's happening at the European Parliament on the nature restoration laws, which we were talking about earlier. This from our colleague in the newsroom, Tommy Meskell. In the last few minutes, it's been announced that the Environment Committee has adjourned its vote on this until the 27th of June. This is after members failed to conclude voting on amendments within the committee's allocated time slot. And on that topic, earlier in the programme, during that discussion between Ciarán Cough and Billy Kelleher, Billy suggested that in the event of the government not meeting their climate targets, the government may have to compulsory purchase order land to meet those targets. And there was some disagreement between the two MEPs on this, so we asked a spokesperson to clarify, and that spokesperson told us Minister Eamon Ryan said he was neither in favour or against CPO, but would have to look at the guidance. So I'm not too sure that we're any clearer on that, but worth bringing that to you. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.